Hello, everyone, and welcome to Note to Scene, a music news podcast covering everything from pop punk to metalcore. I'm Matt Crane.
I'm Tyler Sharp.
And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen, where every week we discuss all the biggest news stories in the music scene. Find more episodes of this show on Apple Podcasts, where you should please rate and review us. Email us at notescene@gmail.com. We have a lot to talk about this week. Big news from Dance Gavin Dance. But first, we're going to talk about comeback albums from Scene Titans, Under Oath, and 30 Seconds to Mars. All right, let's go. So it was crazy to find out Pure Volume is officially shutting down. Kind of an end of an era, right?
Definitely. Pure Volume was important. And it's weird to think that a lot of people don't know about it who are in the scene today.
Yeah, it's weird because Pure Volume was very important. You know, it was like basically like MySpace, but just for music, kind of like just the music aspect of the MySpace experience and discovering bands and all that. But like the last 10 years or so, it hasn't been that. You know, ever since Spin Media bought it, it's been turned into a music news site. So it's like kids these days probably don't even remember what it was, but Pure Volume, you know, kind of was pre-MySpace at one point, you know, as far as blowing bands up. And it was just such a really great, awesome tool to discover new bands, you know, like so many good experiences. Like at one point, I think Greeley Estates were the most streamed band on Pure Volume. It was just a wild time where like real new attention was getting put on real new upcoming bands in a way we don't really see anymore. You know what I mean? It was like the hype was if you were new and cool, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I remember buying Define the Great Line day it came out. And in it was a stock card that just fell right out of it as soon as you opened it. And it was a sampler code where you could go to the Solid State Pure Volume page and download a 30-song sampler from all their bands that was on there. And like I came to Pure Volume more so when it was on the downslope, you know, like 2009, 2010, 2011. But that was when the metalcore cover hype was happening.
Right.
And I remember when Crown the Empire's cover of Forever broke on Pure Volume. And I was like, holy shit, this is terrible, but it's also fantastic.
it had a few moments like that towards the end. But like it was like, you know, 03, man, 04, 05, like 05. Pure Volume was really clicking, and eventually MySpace kind of started to cannibalize it because bands were kind of like, you know, why would we really direct our fans here when we can direct them to the full MySpace experience? But like there were just cool things they would do, like Pure Volume, like they would do this thing like called Band of the Day or whatever, where they just highlight one band on their homepage. And there was this one band called Haven 21. Like no one's gonna know this band. They're just like some local band from like Arizona. But I just saw them on, you know, the homepage as Band of the Day. You should check them out. They're pop punk or something. And I really loved their songs. And they were just some no-name band that no one had ever heard of. But, like, I had 10 songs from them that I would jam all the time. And, you know, they lasted for a year. And, you know, as it goes with local bands, they did, like, a last tour, if you could even call it that. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a Midwest tour, and because that's just what happens with these bands. They last a year and they break up, but they decided to go out with one tour, and they happened to come to where I was living at the time, which I thought was crazy. You know, this local band I found on Pure Volume. So I went to the show, and it wasn't really like they were on tour, more it was just that they were sort of opening for various local shows across the Midwest. You know what I mean? They were just like they just got slotted in at a bunch of local shows as the opening act. And they were so surprised when I showed up that anyone had even came to see them. Like it blew their mind that, you know, they're a local band from Arizona or what or wherever, and somebody here all the way across the country actually came to see them, and they were so stoked on it. And I ended up like hanging out with the band after, and you know, their singer got really fucking drunk and ran full speed into a mailbox. And I'll always have that memory because Pure Volume, connected fans and bands
those
in a
stories,
way that
we don't
see anymore, you know?
Absolutely. Those stories are kind of lost nowadays when you think about music discovery and the way bands connect with fans. That's awesome, man. I'm glad you got something like that out of Pure Volume. I got a ton of metalcore covers.
it's just, it used to be way more intimate, you know?
Yep.
And that, it's sad that, you know, nobody's going to remember the legacy of Pure Volume. But, definitely, you know, there's no need to sit around and mope about it, because we got new music this week, Tyler.
Dude, we got a shit ton of new music, man. It's about time, right?
Yeah, I know, man. So it's, you know, the elephant in the room, we got two big new albums from Under Oath and 30 Seconds to Mars, and it's really interesting, you know, that these two bands would release their comeback albums on the same date for a couple of reasons. Because, you know, one, both of these bands, maybe they didn't come up in the same scene per se, but they came up adjacent to each other. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It was all going on in the same broader scene. Like, I think they might have even done, like, A Taste of Chaos together. Did they? Were they on the same bill?
I don't think they were ever on the same bill, but I know that...
It was like one Taste of Chaos removed. You know, like, totally. Under Oath did it 1 year and 30 Seconds did it the next year. So these bands, while 30 Seconds were, you know, going total mainstream rock and Under Oath were, you know, underground heavy music, they were very adjacent to each other. And yeah, it wouldn't be surprising that there were crossover fans. And, like, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, Jared Leto knew who Under Oath were. It wouldn't shock me.
Not at all. I mean, They're Only Chasing Safety and A Beautiful Lie, those cycles, if they never crossed paths, were very close to one another. Yeah. Especially I just remember seeing Under Oath and 30 Seconds to Mars shirts in Hot Topic all the time when I was in middle school, like next to each other.
Yeah, and shared a common fan base to a certain degree. So what's interesting to me is, you know, both bands are making... They're both making a comeback. Maybe you definitely argue Under Oath is more of a comeback than 30 Seconds to Mars, as, you know, they just haven't been gone as long. But both bands are also changing modes, which I think is the more interesting thing here. Mm-hmm. Changing modes of how they act as a band. You have 30 Seconds to Mars, but they're both bands are doing it in a different way. You have 30 Seconds to Mars really looking to the future with their change of mode. And with Under Oath, you have them sort of looking to the past. And what I mean by this is 30 Seconds to Mars, with their new album, are adapting their arena rock to the modern EDM pop landscape. That is sort of what they're doing here. They're kind of going to the future. They're taking their band where everything's headed. Under Oath, on the other hand, are trying to move into the radio rock market, which is something that is old and has always been there. And, you know, it's this market of bands, you know, that is just never going to go away. There's always going to be a radio station that plays Papa Roach, Three Days Grace, you know, Five Finger Death Punch, Disturbed, and all these sort of bands on loop. And there's always going to be dudes in their truck that want to listen to that. And Under Oath are kind of trying to move into that avenue as a band to evolve to the next step of their career. So I find that just very interesting. One band is going to the future and another band is kind of trying to fit into an already established infrastructure that has been there for a while.
Yeah, definitely. But at the same time, both bands are trying to progress. You know, they're trying to grow their bands. They're trying to take it to a level that they haven't attained before with their previous album. So it is really interesting. It's been 8 years since the last Under Oath record. It's actually been 5 years since the last 30 Seconds to Mars album, which is, I read that right in an article the other day, and I thought, I was like, wow, it really has been that long since the last 30 Seconds to Mars record.
Right.
And there's, I mean, obviously, Jared's been doing movies, and the band just took basically an unannounced hiatus, but...
And, yeah, I mean, I see 30 Seconds to Mars' move, you know, into the more EDM pop modern world is kind of more predictable to me, but I find Under Oath's mode change a little more interesting, because, let's say, 8 to 10 years ago, if Under Oath had done this, bands who would do this 10 years ago move to the radio rock market, it would be perceived as kind of selling out, you know, moving to a bigger space. But as we've seen rock sort of, you know, fade and exit the world stage, the main power in music, radio rock really isn't that big of an arena anymore. It's almost like, you know, a move to radio rock now for a band is more, it's not a move of selling out and getting bigger as much as it is a move of survival. You know, the scene is dying, you know, right. Metalcore is dying. What's left? Oh, this radio rock market is here and it's never going to go away. So let's move into that as a mode of survival. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You see a lot of bands doing this. It's not really a way to get that much bigger anymore. It's just it's a functioning infrastructure that bands are kind of flocking to.
Right. I mean, like you mentioned, it's a way to survive. It's like, what's the move now that the scene is dying? You know, there's no real way to the ceiling is so much lower in the scene than it was 10 years ago, let alone 15 years ago. So bands are like, well, what the hell do we do now? Well, there's rock radio. And to them, you know, it's really hard for me to think that people within the industry don't see what's going on with rock as a whole. You know, like even, rock is last.
Even the biggest bands at rock radio, Three Days Grace, you know, Papa Roach, you know, they're not selling as many records as they used to at all. You know, but they get those singles on the charts, and it keeps them alive enough
to sustain their career.
Yeah, and they can keep playing big rock radio festivals. And it's sort of this weird new survival where like all of rock kind of has to flock to this area. We saw Paramore do it. You know, Paramore said straight up, we want to be an alternative format band, you know, and they chose to move into the alternative rock space, you know, with their album and take it in that direction. And, you know, we've seen tons of bands go into rock radio. The list goes on, you know.
Right now, just on the top 50, we got I Prevail, A Day to Remember, Parkway Drive, The Parkway Fever, Drive. 333, you know, Bullet for My Valentine just dropped a new single on there. Under Oath, Of Mice and Men. The pivots are happening because they have to. There's not really a scene left.
Motionless in White.
Motionless.
You know, A Day to Remember, obviously. It's, so we've seen, it's just, they're all, Pierce the Veil even, you know, we've seen Bring Me the Horizon too. We just we keep seeing bands trying to do this because it's just kind of where rock survives now.
What it comes down to, and this is what we're going to get into with both of these albums, how effective is the pivot? How effective is the rebrand? Because that's what it comes down to. And really the only band who has done it right so far from the scene is Bring Me the Horizon. They're really the only band who has made a true pivot, a true rebrand, and has been able to fully capitalize on new sound, new fan, and continue to grow their band bigger than it ever has been.
Whereas, like, I Prevail have slipped into the rock radio market and succeeded there, but they're going to be stuck there. Bring Me have actually maybe created something new. Okay, so let's move on and start talking about these albums, okay? So Under Oath released their first new album in 8 years, Erase Me. Tyler Sharp. I know you got a lot of thoughts on this one, my man. This is Tyler's favorite band of all time, period, for anyone who doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
I guess let's just give me your nutshell, where you are with this album. And I'll kind of give you mine too, and then we'll go through all the dirty details here, my man. Cool.
There, thankfully, and this comes with the utmost relief you could possibly imagine, there is a lot on this album that I genuinely enjoy. There is also a notable amount that I do not. It is far from a perfect record. Do I think that it will damage Under Oath's legacy? No. I think there are a lot of redeemable qualities on this album. And depending on where these songs actually line up, once they get their full pushes and the cycle comes to a close within the next year or 2 years, we'll see what the next step is going to warrant. But like I said, there's a lot that I do like. Altogether, I'm at a 7 out of 10 for this record. What about you, Matt?
That's a pretty good score. I am at an interesting place with this album. So, you know, I wasn't the biggest fan of the singles. You know, I've come a little more around on My Teeth. I think that's a pretty good song. I don't like Rapture still. But, you know, to me, Under Oath albums, there's this, like, trend I've noticed in them. And it's sort of that ever since They're Only Chasing Safety came out, which, let's just stop this fight right here and let's just get this on paper. To me, that is the perfect album. That is the perfect Under Oath album. Tyler is, you are of the, I'm going to let you say it.
Define the great line. You are very wrong. Although, I mean, Chasing Safety is a near perfect record. Doesn't touch Define.
Just got to get that out there that Tyler and I are on completely different sides of this duality of album argument. But to me, Chasing Safety was the perfect record. And the band, ever since then, have been losing melody is the key trend I've noticed. Like, Chasing Safety was very melodic. Define the Great Line sacrificed a lot of melody for a lot more harder moments, but you know, I still really like that record. I think it's a really good record. Lost in the Sound, we sacrificed even more melody, and it just started to get boring to me at that point. And then we end up at Disambiguation, where there's no melody at all. I mean, it's hard to call that music. It's a, you know what I mean? It's just a wall of noise hitting you at all times, and it's an impressive technical feat, but it's just, it doesn't really sound good. I don't really enjoy the listening experience unless I'm looking at it at a technical level. That record to me is just, it's just a, it's like they suck all the melody out. And this record brings some melody back. If you stack this next to Disambiguation, you know what I mean? This sounds, you know, this sounds like a rock album. You know what I'm saying? It's, we have melody back in the picture. So that was a relief to me. I'm going kind of long here. Ultimately, I ended up liking some songs, but a lot of it kind of blurred together to me, and a lot of it kind of swirled together, and I came to a 6 out of 10 on the record.
Okay, so we're not terribly far apart.
No,
and
I
didn't think it was a trash album.
No, it's not a trash album. You know, it just doesn't move me, man. Like, it's just, it doesn't move me like the old ones, and, you know, the songs, I just don't think are particularly that great. But it's not a trash album. You know, there are, it's a decent album. 6 out of 10 to me is a decent score. I think it's a fair one.
So it's interesting you bring up the comparison to Disambiguation. The angle, as far as narrative goes around Erase Me, is that this is just the rock version of Disambiguation. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I could kind of see that. Cause you know, you got kind of some of the similar tones.
It's just dark.
Like the doominess, right? Like, I call it sometimes like ancient Egypt core, where like, you know what I mean? You can just see like black and white pyramids in the background as they're playing, kind of, you know, like You Bored Alive did it with Hounds of Anubis. Yeah, that some of that doominess, it carries over, but they've melodicized it, you know, on this record, if that's a word.
Totally. You compare like the pyramids of Egypt and the doominess to it. I mean, they have a single called Rapture. You know, this sound is kind of supposed to embody some sort of grander notion, you know, like this grand scheme of things. And I think these songs accomplish that. The choruses are still really big. Whether or not they always deliver is certainly debatable. But I think songs such as Bloodlust, I Hate It, Hold Your Breath, the outro to No Frame, and In Motion all have choruses that are fucking massive. And then you go to Rapture, which is more like, you know, we'll say the Avenged Sevenfold riff song. And the hook there is really interesting because the chorus is kind of split up into two different sections. But I think it's a solid hook. What's weird and what's really interesting to me is that it doesn't soar like your Bloodlust chorus, like your I Hate It chorus, like your Hold Your Breath chorus. It's really more subdued in a way that obviously is just checking a box for rock radio. And I fucking hate that. You know, like there is a systematic approach to having success on rock radio. There's a formula. There are boxes that need to be checked off in order for rock radio DJs to even give you the time of day when you're submitting your shit to rock radio. And it just blows my mind how they won't give a high-end chorus the time of day, but they'll give a lower caliber chorus as far as musicianship goes. But if it sounds, you know, in a lower, darker tone, lower melodies, then they'll accept that. Like, that fits the formula better. Like, that's so backwards to me.
I know. I have a tough time with that, though, because I really just fucking hate that song, you know, and I just don't think it's a good song.
But in the grand scheme of things, you get that, right? Like
yeah, I do kind of get it. I just think I could see other singles on this album having more success at radio.
I totally agree.
Even like a song like Wake Me. Like, to me,
well, that's the next single. I fucking hate that song.
Yeah, but to me, it's, you know, it's boring, nothing more core radio rock. But I could, in another song, potential single, I Hate It. Like, you know, I could see it. I Hate It being a better single than Rapture. You know, I Hate It. It feels like it could work as a rock radio single, but like, I still find the song boring as is. But what's weird is when I think about that song, I don't know how I got into this this thought process here, and you know, feel free to set me on fire, Tyler. But I just started hearing Cove Rebber singing this song. Like, if you put Cove Rebber on this song, all of a sudden, like, it kind of sounds like it could have been the Seosin follow up to Self-Titled in a weird way. Like, this song kind of could work with a vocalist like him. I don't know. Tim's riffing on this song is very like Bo Seosin-y, you know, that kind of like windy riff he's doing. And I don't know if that's what it was or just the general melody that Spencer's trying to pull off. But if you put like a Cove Rebber from Seosin on that song, I see it just popping in a way it doesn't really pop with Spencer on it.
See, what's interesting is that you have a song like Rapture, which sounds exactly like what we were expecting to get from the next Sleepwave album, you know, with Spencer on the chorus, on the main melodies with cleans. But then you have songs like Bloodlust, like I Hate It, like the outro to No Frame. And I don't know if there's an effect on his voice there, or if he's using a different technique, or if it's just the overall production quality. He sounds different, right? He sounds more like Aaron. It sounds better.
Yeah.
And that's just me getting back to checking boxes off for rock radio. And and I really feel like this album overall was hindered by that approach. But again, that's their goal, right? Their goal is to be a big radio rock band now. And they, right. I genuinely believe to make a cohesive record, they did the best that they could in this new mindset to give fans the best of both worlds, because there are heavy moments on this record.
There definitely are. But quickly, and I know you're gonna disagree with me on these, but I gotta shout some songs that I really didn't like.
Okay.
I Gave Up, It Has to Start, Bloodlust, shouts to 2005 Finch. I just, all those songs felt completely flat for me, and were just, they just like blurred together in this haziness that really made this album just kind of incoherent for me, and very immemorable. Hold Your Breath, okay, so like that song, the intro to that song, you know what I'm talking about, that like electronic bass rumbling that happens. Mm-hmm. Are you with me?
Yeah.
When I heard that, like, I was like, this sounds like this could be like the future of Under Oath. And then like it gets hard as fuck, right? And it was like, holy shit, all of a sudden we're real raunchy again. And I was like, fuck yeah. But then that song busts into like a Jimmy Eat World chorus, dude. And what the hell is that chorus doing on that song? It's so tonally off. Like, that was supposed that was supposed to be the fucking bruiser of the album. And it just hits you so hard in the beginning, and then we go sky high and all melodic with this fucking Jimmy Eat World chorus, man. And I was just like, like, I'm trying here. And you just like, you just throw me another curveball.
Yeah. I mean, it's a slightly unnerving dichotomy between the verse and the chorus in that song, but the chorus is solid. Like, you give it that, right? Like, it's good.
On a Jimmy Eat World song, man. It doesn't work here on this fucking bruiser. No, no way, man. It does not work.
I felt like they walked the line between heavy Under Oath and newfound rock melodic Under Oath really well on that song.
In this instance, it was way too choppy to me. It was way too, like, whoa, tone shift. It really, really threw me off here. Some good songs. In Motion. I liked that song. I think it has like a very good melody and a very good screaming set. I really liked Aaron and Spencer doing the vocal switch off. You know, just any more Aaron you can get is a good thing on this album, because, you know, it's few and far between. But like, you know, that chorus really goes sky high. Spencer just really takes it way up there, and I thought it was really good. And I think the screams are used especially effectively at the end here. The way they sort of come in, it's abrasive, and it feels very charging. What'd you think of that song?
Yeah, while you're on it, one thing I want to shout out that no one seems to be talking about is Tim's riff in Motion, in the verse. It's got this super winding post-hardcore riff. And he goes in and out of it every once in a while. But towards the beginning and middle of the verses, he'll jump into it again. And I'm just like, holy shit, 2004.
Right.
Like it's almost like that Note to Self riff, you know, kind of, you know, but a little bit more proggy in a way. Weird over Spencer's. They're not trying to rap at the beginning of this song in these verses.
No.
But the delivery of it has the essence of a more, oh, how do I even describe that? Controlled and succinct delivery of vowels and words, I guess I'll say, as opposed to just actually singing them.
Great chorus though, man. And like just as I'm listening to it though, I'm like, you know what though? This fucking just this kind of sounds like hard Chevelle. You know what I mean? Like it's like, yo, shouts to Chevelle, man. Like shouts
dude,
to Jarvis.
Absolutely.
Like, shouts to that man. Just doing it, you know, still doing it. Still. And fucking dude, they're a three piece. You know what I mean? Like to make that
right?
any big of a sound as a three piece, like no shots at Chevelle, but like, you
Years.
Know, I like Chevelle. Like you know,
Same.
another rock radio staple and under of I felt like at times we're kind of emulating Chevelle core here on this record. But overall to me, like On My Teeth remains the best constructed song
Ooh,
on the album.
Get
that's
out
still
of here,
I think
man.
A song, you know.
I...
Like I like No Frame. I think that's a weird left turn, but I just don't know how many times I'm going to revisit that.
It is a lot of work because the best part of the song, and I believe the best part of the entire album, is the outro. I think that melody is
really,
just
I like
massive.
It just because it's such a weird switch up. It doesn't fit with the rest of the album. I mean,
for
it,
sure.
the tonally it does. The doominess of it, you know, the sort of ominous build of it does fit with this album, but sonically it doesn't. And it's like a different thing. And I'm like, okay, I'm kind of about this. It was a nice breath of fresh air, but On My Teeth is still my favorite song on this record. What's your favorite song?
Right now it's Bloodlust, and I cannot believe that you don't like that song.
That's a write-off for me.
That's ridiculous. It's
yeah,
so
man.
It's so funny that you say you could hear Cove and I Hate It, which I don't disagree with you, but I could hear him more in the Bloodlust chorus. I find myself singing that chorus all the time. And
I'm
then
not
they,
gonna get into it, but I could hear Cove in a lot of places on this
true,
record.
True. Yeah, definitely. But they have those melodies in the chorus on Bloodlust that just they send it, I think, the most sky high they get on the whole record. And I hate the quote-unquote transition because it's not a transition. It's just some ethereal electronics from Chris and then a double tom hit from Aaron, and then they jump right into the bridge, which once they're there in the bridge is fantastic. It's huge. It's dark. It's doomy. It's basically, you know, what people wished we would have gotten from Disambiguation, those who wanted a big chorus and big moments like that. But yeah, my only gripe with the song is that there are no transitions, that it just jumps from place to place. But I think altogether, that's the best song on the record. And I want to give a shout out to the opener. It has to start somewhere. I almost wish they would have. I think I know deep down that On My Teeth was the right song to lead with, but it has to start somewhere. There's just something about that song that brings back the urgency that I grew to love in Under Oath back in the 2000s. I get
almost.
There's
it
something
almost
there.
Gets there.
There's something there, and I think it really has to do with Aaron's drumming on it. He's just a fucking monster, man. I really think that that song launches the album in the right direction, and I was definitely pleased with it when I sat down to listen to the album for the first time. I was like, oh shit, here we go. And then we get into Rapture and On My Teeth, we're like, well, maybe not. And then my two least favorite songs on the record, Wake Me and Sync With You. Wake Me is obviously the second rock song. I would not be surprised if that's the song that they go for next. It's the song that got added to New Music Friday on Spotify when the album dropped this past week. And Sync With You is just, I think, a genuinely bad song.
Oh, terrible.
Just structurally.
Absolutely terrible. Literally just like, I mean, bad filler. You know what I mean? Not even filler. It's worse than filler.
Yeah, which is sad because that was supposed to be a fan service song, right? It's a heavy track.
Yeah.
It's not meant for anything
wasted opportunity.
Exactly. So I was really disappointed in that song because I was like, all
you
right.
You could have just cut it from the album and the
absolutely.
Album gets better for it and just make Hold Your Breath harder, you know? drop the Hold Your Breath chorus, cut that song and replace them. Yeah, it's just at times, you know, this record, it's weird though, because like it doesn't just quite feel like a hard rock album to me. Like I really still have so many doubts about this band succeeding as a radio rock band. Like sometimes it just sounds like a hard Deftones album to me. You know what I mean? And that kind of music just is still it doesn't really do well at radio anymore. Like
right.
Deftones don't do well at radio. This might be still too complex and not catchy enough for rock radio. And my biggest problem with this record, I didn't feel anything. It didn't make me feel anything. And Under Oath Records used to make me feel something.
Right, definitely.
And I got nothing from this. emotionally.
I definitely think that there's voids here in this record. It's far from perfect, like we said at the beginning. And the problem is that they needed to write their version of Bring Me the Horizons Drown, and they didn't do it. And like you said, I remain unconvinced that any of these songs reach a high enough caliber to successfully put them at the next level that they're trying to step to.
And I mean, like, we see, you know, Rapture right now, you know, is at number 32 on rock radio. But, you know, that's Concord Records just injected a bunch of money into the band and got a bunch of radio ads. And they're at that point on rock radio at number 32 where we don't really know which way they're going to go. It could fall right off or it could climb. And I just, that song is not strong enough. And I still haven't heard it on the radio. So it's not in rotation here, at least. And I have my doubts that these songs are catchy enough or, you know, high caliber enough to really connect at radio. And then that sort of ultimately defeats the whole purpose of what the band's trying to do. And like I said, I didn't feel anything, and that's kind of just where I end up at a 6 out of 10. It's a decently executed album, but it doesn't really move me or do anything for me.
And, you know, I totally agree with that, because on a personal level, it didn't move me much, but neither does any song that's pretty much ever been in the top 10 in the last 5 years on rock radio. You know, like, it's kind of a shallow business, you know? Like, these songs are just stock rock riffs with kind of stock melodies in the choruses.
Papa Roach Help moved me, man. That's a good fucking song.
Dude,
number one, that's a good fucking song.
I agree. That's a really solid song.
That said, that connected to me with me way more than, like, any of these Under Oath songs did.
Yeah, I don't know. There's definitely, it's a dark song. Do I personally think that it is good enough to rise on rock radio? No, but I'm still going to stand by what I said on the episode before. I don't think the top 10 on rock radio now is worth the shit that it's built upon.
There's a lot of garbage there.
So
definitely.
Do I think it can climb? I think potential. I think they have a shot, considering where rock radio is at right now.
I don't think they do, man.
I'm not going to stand down from my band. Like, this is my band. They're on rock radio. I'm going to stand by them.
So we did our first week sales predictions, like, pretty early on. Mm-hmm. And I think you had said 13,000, right? Mm-hmm. And I had said 18,000. I'm going to stick with 18,000.
Are you going to stick with 18?
Yeah, I'm sticking with 18.
I have.
How about you? Do you want to do any revisionist here? Because we predicted way early, and now we've sort of seen
the reception. But I've had some insider info, so I can't.
Oh, so you're locked in at 13.
I got to stick with my number. I can't adjust any based on what
I'm
I know.
I'm worried you might be on the money, honestly.
Don't do that to me. But real quick, before we move on, massive shouts to Randy Nichols, Under Oath's manager. He invited me as a VIP to the band's secret show in Chicago this past weekend. It was awesome. Got to meet him. Not like a lot of other managers out there. Always got to give props to Randy.
When I was at AP, he was always an awesome dude to work with. So 30 Seconds to Mars also released their comeback album. This is their fifth album. It's called America. You know, did you notice it's kind of interesting thing they did, which I thought was pretty cool with their album art. Did you notice how when you buy the album, the album art is just a series of words, and you can, when you buy the album, you can pick your own words to put on the cover of the album.
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
It was cool. I saw a really funny one, which I was just fucking cracking up, where somebody who had bought the album and the band retweeted it, they made their cover just ranking the band's discography. That's so meta and awesome.
That's awesome. What was number one?
Probably Beautiful Lie.
Okay.
You know? But it was just hilarious to see that metal level in the band retweeting it. Right. But this album, you know, I'm just going to dive in real quick. Walk on Water, Dangerous Night, One Track Mind, you know, Love is Madness, which has Halsey, apparent Pierce the Veil fan, by the way, we found out. All those songs are fucking bangers, man. I love all those songs. And Rescue Me, to me, is the best song on this album, America.
Wow.
Like,
wow.
Perfect marriage of this band's sort of emo anthem rock mixed with, like, EDM pop sensibilities. I fucking love this song, man. Like, you even got, like, the nice reference to Love, Lust, Faith on it, where Jared says, whatever you do, don't lose your faith. the devil's quick to love, lust, and pain. Kind of a little switch up there, which I thought was really interesting. It's just a super fucking moving chorus. Jared says, rescue me from the demons in my mind. Rescue me from the lovers of my life. That song just fucking blew me away, man. It's like an 8.5 out of 10 for me. It's one of my favorite songs of the year. That's the first half of the record right there. And I was just like, holy shit. And then something happens, man. The second half of this record runs out of gas. Like, as soon as you get to the second half, it slows down, and there's nothing remarkable or good left, and the band sort of just get back to playing Bad U2. So that's my take on it. Where are you at with this record?
Bad U2. I'm glad we are on the same page for the second half of this record, man.
Yeah, it was like, what happened? Like, it was just like they ran out of gas, man. Like,
my first listen through on from track number 7, Great Wide Open, to number 9, Dawn Will Rise, I didn't even notice that the songs had changed.
Yeah.
I thought I was still listening to the same song. So, yeah, I mean, obviously they picked the right singles, that's for sure. Walk on Water, we talked about, was the unexpected sports anthem of 2017. Low Key, Dangerous Night, banger. I didn't think it was a 9 out of 10 track. I think it was an 8 out of 10-ish. I've grown to like it a little more. One Track Mine, Bars from ASAP Rocky. Still not a fan of that whole song, but his verse definitely saved it for me.
The infamous line, you know. Ooh, heard it's only 30 seconds to Mars.
And it took you even less just to get to my heart. I mean,
interesting that just talking about the band's name and how you interpret it. Like,
right.
He is interpreting the band's name to mean it takes 30 seconds to get to Mars. Mm-hmm. That's kind of ASAP Rocky. And this is how I had always envisioned it. As the band, like, the end of a journey to Mars, and we are now 30 seconds to Mars, like 30 seconds to landing, is kind of how I always read the band's name. Were you on that side, or were you,
no.
Did you always see it how ASAP saw it?
Yeah, I always saw it how ASAP saw it. You're kind of a in motion take on it. I've never heard anyone describe it like that.
Yeah, that's kind of how I always thought of it. You know, like, you always hear like 30 seconds to landing, you know, 10 seconds. I always thought it was like, we're almost to Mars. We're almost to this new frontier. We're 30 seconds to something amazing. It's kind of how I always read this band's name.
Nice.
So hearing ASAP, you know, have his own take on it, you know, sort of was cool to hear.
You're out there unpacking the band names, man. So yeah.
What's the meaning of your band name, yo?
Shouts to all you young journalists out there.
Keep hustling.
Love is Madness. I gotta be honest, I was disappointed. I wanted more from a Halsey feature on a 30 Seconds to Mars song. I get it, you know.
Hey, man, it's better than Him and I.
I don't know if it's better than Him and I.
You know, man.
I despise that song, and I'm not sure if this can live up to even that caliber. So pretty disappointed in that. Great Wide Open, I'm pretty sure, is just a cover of a worship song. Which is really interesting in the context of this whole album. A lot of comparisons can be drawn between U2 and something such as Hillsong United, or really any new world church, mega church, worshipy kind of band. And I feel like a lot of the structures, the core structures of the songs on this album, really were just meant to kind of serve that same purpose. They're meant to fill rooms. They're meant to sound larger than life. They're meant to make you feel something inside. And I mean, they did it really well on the singles. But as we talked about towards the second half of the album, it's like you can only use the same formula so many times.
Well, it's like, and there's that kind of Americana vibe flowing throughout that second half, too, with songs like Great Wide Open. And it kind of turns it back around to Walk on Water, you know, and just sort of the America, the title of the album. Ultimately, while the last half of the record falls flat, the first half is just so fucking good. You know, like I said, Rescue Me is one of my favorite songs of the year. Dangerous Night is one of my favorite songs of the year. One Track Mine is one of my favorite songs of the year. This is just a fucking total fucking winner of an album for me. And I come to an 8 out of 10 on this record.
Wow.
Where are you at, Tyler Sharp?
Wow. See, I have caveats with all the singles. Walk on Water, I think, was the most cohesive for me. The Dangerous Night one, the chorus just levels out. You know, I feel like there's the climax just... it gets me there, and then it's like, oh, we just leveled out, we're not really going anywhere.
Rescue That's a near perfect me. Song to me.
Oh my god, dude, Rescue Me was almost there. And then when it hits that pop EDM chorus, of course Leto has to just fucking impose himself over the beat, like with that crazy note that he holds when he sings Rescue Me. I hate it. It's
Leto fangirl over here. That note, dude, his voice is so great.
Get
oh my god.
Out of here. Serve the song. Oh my god, he's singing out of his ass. He's pulling a Johnny Craig. That's what he's doing.
It's like in my top 5 30 Seconds to Mars songs.
That is absolutely
pushing up there, man.
Ridiculous, man. Absolutely ridiculous.
So what's your score, Tyler?
Altogether, I'm at a 6.7. Ooh. I am very disappointed in the second half of this album, and that's what really took down the score. Two interesting notes I want to bring up before we move on. Walk on Water is in the commercial for the new season of Deadliest Catch, which makes complete sense.
It kind of makes sense, right?
I'm watching this commercial, and there's this boat just getting thrashed on the waves, and all you hear in the background is Jared Leto singing Walk on Water, which
Dangerous
is hilarious.
Night is still doing good at radio.
At all, top 10?
The top 10 on all radio. Yep. I would assume Rescue Me is going to be the next single. And
It might be the Halsey song.
I think Rescue Me could just crush it, though, if they unleash that. Halsey, I mean, yeah, I could do well, too.
I think Halsey just got clout right now, man. You know Halsey mean? Just got clout.
Maybe that's before they insert that one in the charts. But so, right. Interesting. The record's projected to sell like 55 to 60,000 copies first week, which I think, you know, Love, Less, Faith, Dreams did 50,000, right? About 53, maybe 50,000. So
right around there.
The band are set to have, you know, an increase in sales, however minor the increase is. And even just selling the same you did on your last record is considered a big success.
That's a win today, man.
Yeah, so I think the fact that this band could sell 60,000 copies first week is fucking, like, this is huge. This is proof that, like, you put out good singles like this band has, and your band will win. And that's kind of where they are.
This record is a pivot for 30 Seconds to Mars. It is saying that we can do pop music in its current state. And I really think this album is just going to be a bridge to this band's career.
Yeah,
this is getting them to the next step. And I feel like that whatever the next album is, man, if they could get these a couple more singles to really burn and really enter top 40 and be in that conversation, you know, we might be looking like an 80K first week for the next album. They might start dominating streaming.
With these singles, they've just set themselves up on a path to success and modernization. And bringing this back to Under Oath, seeing Under Oath at Rock Radio, it just seems so unsure to me. And whereas this 30 Seconds to Mars, they seem like they've arrived again and they're packing heat and they've got a number one single and they're back on the top 40. And it's they're going to sell a bunch of records. And this just feels like the future. The band found a way to make their sound work in a modern pop landscape, and I just think it's an incredible achievement, and like, it's so great to have this band back in this way.
I'm gonna get you a life-size Jared Leto poster so you can hang it
my
in
guy,
your closet, man.
My guy, dude,
I do think it's
wasn't my guy, you know, for a while,
right?
Like,
I
was like, fuck this, man. I mean, it wasn't a bad record, but you know, certainly didn't set the world on fire. And I was like, but man, this band just, they won me back with this one.
I think it's a little unfair to compare Under Oath and 30 Seconds to Mars in their current capacities. I know, you know, why we're doing it is two comebacks of bands that grew up in the same scene. They're aiming for two different things here. That's what it comes down to.
I just think one band achieved what they were aiming for and one band really hasn't. And probably won't,
well,
you know.
We're going to have to wait and see. And I've got my personal hope in Under Oath that Rapture is going to climb, that Wake Me can do something as a single if they decide to push it. I hope it's Bloodlust. I do agree. As far as longevity-wise, this 30 Seconds to Mars album may be remembered more fondly than this Under Oath album. But I still think
They're set. You know what I mean? Like, they're back in the game. It's just like, it works, you know, what they did. And I think they made the right move, you know.
But if this Under Oath album is a proposition, this Under Oath album is saying that if this does well, then we're going to be able to justify continuing this cycle, continuing this journey to rock radio and potentially beyond. I'm not going to lie. This is going to come way out of left field, man. But when I saw them at that secret show in Chicago, they've got their floor toms on there, and they played No Frame. And Chris sometimes beat on the floor tom. Tim sometimes beats on the floor toms. But Tim was playing a keyboard. Spencer was playing a keyboard. Chris was on his keyboards. And this band is one pivot away, and I'm kind of throwing up in my mouth by saying this, but it's close to Imagine Dragons down the line, you know? Like, if they could get some sort of song, some sort of momentum in some different lanes outside of rock radio and write songs that are necessary to pivot that way, it's possible.
You know what,
like,
the problem is, though, man?
Like, that band can do it.
You know what the problem is? They don't have the songs. They're not on this record.
Right now. But this record is a proposition saying that, like I said, if it justifies the next cycle, those songs could be on the next cycle.
Come on, man.
You got to get, this is the only, if this album, oh my gosh, I'm fighting very hard for this album right now.
I would have liked to see Under Oath do something like 30 Seconds to Mars, where they made something new and creative and flipped the script.
I think
and
these songs are creative for rock radio.
This is, to me, Under Oath record is just them constraining themselves to a past, looking to the past and constraining themselves to something that has existed forever. Whereas I think they could have made something really new and innovative.
Sometimes you gotta look back to go forward, man. They're trying to establish themselves here on this record. Once they're established, they'll have more ground, more footing to be able to do more things in the future. You gotta start looking like a couple steps ahead. Like, this is a chess game, right? What are you gonna do 3 to 4 steps down the line? If they could just get some footing with this album, who knows what could happen on the next few cycles?
But then if none of the singles connect, the album bombs.
Come on, man. Why you gotta go there? Come on.
That's just what I see happening. I don't want it to happen, but the music's just not there.
We'll get first week numbers for next episode. We'll see.
We will. And we will see how the singles do. But we could argue all day, Tyler, but I think we should move on to our next story.
All right.
Dance Gavin Dance released a new single. It's called Midnight Crusade from the band's 8th album. Holy shit, their 8th album.
Mm-hmm.
Artificial Selection. Their 8th album on Rise Records.
They've never been on a different label.
On the same fucking record label, which is cool. Tyler Sharp, what do you think of this song?
I was so impressed by this song. I was just so happy with this song. Like, I had high hopes for this lead single, and I still have high hopes for this album.
I am shocked, Tyler Sharp, that you love this
Are
song.
Are you shocked, man? Are you
shocked.
Really shocked?
I'm just like, holy shit, I fell out of my chair.
This band just keeps putting out bangers. Like, I cannot give enough shouts to Will Swan,
yeah,
the riff master. Like, that dude has just got it on lock. I don't know if this band could write a bad song at this point.
Shouts to Tillian at the disco, too.
I mean, absolutely, right? Like, his look in this music video is a mood, man.
Yeah, dude. Like, he's like, I'm Brendan too, man.
Homie's got it going on. Interesting. First beginning of the song, intro, we got Tillian in a very raspy atmosphere in his delivery. I thought that was really interesting because we don't, mm-hmm, you know, when you think of Tillian, you just automatically like, oh, super high end, super clean with the sheen. And I obviously it was on purpose to make him sound a little raspier. I like it. I really like it. It gave it a little bit of an edge. I think the chorus, holy shit, man. The hook is ridiculous. And when he says, so there's a pre-chorus, he says, you're salty, can't fault you, I'm numb to the rhythm that guides you, take all your confetti away. And then it's building as he says that. And then when it drops, he says, I know, with a bunch of gusto behind himself. And I instantly took that as a nod to Lemon Meringue Tie when Johnny's repeating himself in that chorus. And he's just fucking belting those words out. That just took me right back to it, and I was like, holy shit, man. 8 albums later, we're coming full circle. I sing this song all the time. I've listened to it probably somewhere between 20 and 30 times since it's come out, and I'm about it. Dance Gavin Dance.
What's your score, Tyler?
I'm at a 8.5 out of 10.
Nice. Yeah, Lemon Meringue Tie Man, bringing it back to when I loved this band.
Tell me you didn't hear that in that chorus.
No, that's cool. No, that's totally cool. You know, it's back when this band meant a lot to me. But, you know, now, and, you know, I this is the parade I don't ever want to rain on, because my favorite thing happening the past couple of years is how well Dance Gavin Dance is doing, and mm-hmm. how much Tyler Sharp loves it, and how stoked you are on it, and how stoked every Dance Gavin Dance fans, like, I'm so happy for you guys, because your band is making it somehow while every other band is crashing and burning and they're pleasing you. And I used to be a Dance Gavin Dance fan, and I'm just kind of not anymore. To me, this is just another Dance Gavin Dance song leaning towards maybe more of their poppy tendencies and sensibilities. Like, this is not, you know, a harder Dance Gavin Dance song. It's a little more streamlined, like you said. It's not just Tillian doing the high thing and then screaming. He's rasping, and it's kind of sort of converging into more of a, like, structured song. I'm at a 6.5 out of 10 on it. You know, it's a well-made song, but it really just doesn't do anything for me. Just another Dance Gavin Dance song.
Oh,
a little poppier.
Oh, man. this is the fourth album with Tillian, right?
Yeah,
we had Acceptance Speech, and then the next two, and now it's this one. It's just amazing to me how this band has continually been able to deliver album after album after album, despite all the lineup instability throughout the first half of their career, and still maintain their fan base through it all. You know, like, people were talking about this band, and then when they solidified their shit, people were still talking about them because the music was that good. It kept people coming back. I was just slightly disappointed with Acceptance Speech, with the big Tillian comeback. But the Tillian comeback in and of itself carried that cycle to the next album, and then to the next album with Mothership. And it's just been amazing to watch this band grow through everything while the scene is falling just to obliteration all around them. The biggest they've ever been. Like, they are, this band is literally the biggest they've ever been in their career. And I fucking love, I never thought I'd say this again on the show, but shouts to Rise Records for totally capitalizing off of the Mothership hype and launching the pre-orders before ever releasing a song. Like, just do it, man. Like, capitalize on that hype. If you got it, just do it. And they did it. So yeah. I'm really excited to see the first week numbers. I cannot wait to hear the rest of this record. I'm so glad that there's still a band in the scene that's making music that gets people excited. Like, people, I name another band, maybe what, Falling in Reverse, that fans get genuinely excited about when they release new music, you know, like the,
you know, I don't understand it. You know, this band, they've just, to me, they've sound the same forever. And I just got bored of it, and I fell off from it. But, like, you know, it's nice to watch and not be a part of, if you kind of get what I'm saying.
Definitely.
Here. Like, it's not my thing anymore. But I really do enjoy watching the band have success, and I love seeing the Dance Gavin Dance fans get hyped. It's just cool to see people get hyped about a fucking scene band. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just cool to see that. All right, before we go, Tyler, story so far. We got to talk about this. Is this fucking album happening, or what?
As far as I know, man, you know, I don't know any behind-the-scenes information. Pure Noise dropped a teaser on Twitter with whatever their last single was called, Out of Time or Out of Mind or whatever that banger was called that they dropped in the fall as a Lucy. And it was just of tweets asking.
It was called Out of It. Great fucking Lucy single,
banger,
by the way.
Right?
I mean, that was a banger. We were stoked on that one.
We were about it. And so Pure Noise dropped this video of the song playing in the background. It's just got, like, this psychedelic visual going on. And then it just pops up fans' tweets asking where the album was.
So they're teasing. I mean, long story short, they're teasing here.
Totally.
And,
the album's coming.
Which is crazy. This would be their first album since 2015, the self-titled record.
3 years, man.
That's crazy. It just feels like forever, man.
It has. Yes.
And it's getting to the point where, like, this could be huge. You know, like, I really do feel like people are waiting for this. Like, it's kind of becoming a meme at this point. Like, where the fuck is the Story So Far record?
Right,
you know what
right.
I mean? It's a meme.
So it's going to be interesting whether or not they've managed the gap well enough. Did they take it too far, pull a Pierce the Veil? Or did they manage it just right and say, go for a, I don't know, maybe a 30 Seconds to Mars, you know?
Yeah.
Like, did they manage the gap right? That's what it comes down to.
Is this the pop punk band that gets the pass from hardcore bands?
Oh, no, the one? Yeah. I mean, Parker Wishes,
when all the hardcore
right?
bands meet up and have their commune, is
Parker
this the
Wishes,
band that gets the
he wears
pass?
A fucking down presser cutoff and all of the, oh my God, don't even get me started on that, Matt. Don't even go there right now because I'm about to
They're
go
the band
off.
Though, right? They're the ones. They get the pass, right?
I mean, Parker has a hardcore band that he plays in outside of the story so far. Like, it's just, I can't go there right now. I can't. I'm about to go off, man.
Yeah, well, like you said, though, it'll be interesting to see, you know, if they've waited too long or not. I kind of don't think they have, because I feel palpable hype out there, and it's just a matter of what they come back with. And like, we Out of It was a great signal, you know what I'm saying? Like, that song,
I don't
that amazing pre-chorus, that was a you know what I mean?
I don't
That's a
know.
great
Can
signal
they
that they could come
song?
Back with
Can they top
with
it?
better songs. Oh, yeah, totally. I mean,
can they?
They've done better than it before. Totally. They can
I
totally
mean,
top
yeah,
that song.
They have done better before, but Self-Titled was ultimately a bit of a disappointment. I feel like that album has aged well. But
yeah,
right off
I
the
mean,
bat.
I like songs off that record, though. And, you know, I liked the lead single. What was it called? Nerve?
Yeah.
You know, it was a bit of a disappointment, but I think they could come back. We'll see.
It'll be interesting. I'm excited to talk about it. We got another scene
that's,
band we
I
could
mean,
talk
that's
about.
That's going to be a lead story when it happens.
Oh, absolutely.
So we will see you then, people. But that is it for the show this week, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this show, please, please take the time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Give us those 5 stars, and we will love you so, so much. If you have any questions for the show, feel free to email them to notescene@gmail.com, and we will answer them on the show. Till then, see you next week, everyone.